If you look at the blockchain and you look at any one record on the blockchain, the thing that's really hard to do is prove that the user intended for that transaction to happen.
Hello, welcome to episode 13 of The Bitcoin Game. I'm Rob Mitchell. I spoke with Stephen Sprague, an expert in the underutilized technology called the Trusted Execution Environment that exists on many of our devices. Stephen's leveraged his extensive knowledge in this field to launch Rivets, a company dedicated to bringing personal security to Bitcoin transactions and more. The capabilities of this technology give me hope that there will soon be a migration past the current broken security paradigm. And perhaps Bitcoin's need for ultimate security will be a catalyst to expand the use of this technology. I'm here with Stephen Sprague, CEO of Rivets. Thanks for coming on the Bitcoin Game.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Before we get into Rivets, I just wanted to find out what your background is.
Sure. So my background is I've worked in the trusted computing space for almost my whole career. I was involved in a company called Wave Systems. I was CEO of Wave for over 15 years, and we were one of the original founders of the Trusted Computing Standards Body and did a lot of the software development work in enterprise for these hardware security technologies, primarily in PCs, and left a year and a half ago to start a new company, in this case Rivets, focused on the application of these very advanced cybersecurity technologies to the consumer marketplace.
Wow, that's really interesting. So it sounds like you're probably one of the biggest experts in the space.
Well, I've certainly spent a lot of time and a lot of air miles traveling around in this. It's been great fun bringing my knowledge and the company's capabilities to Bitcoin. It took a while to understand that while we spend a lot of time talking about crypto, there really is a big difference between cryptography and cybersecurity, and how do we properly provide the right protections for consumers in this environment.
How and when did you become interested in Bitcoin?
Sure. It's actually kind of a fun story. I got suggested by somebody to go to the Miami Bitcoin conference a little over a year ago and really booked it the night before and went down there. And I think my first reaction of knowing I was not at a normal cybersecurity conference was when the classic girls in gold makeup were handing us drinks at the roof bar in South Beach in Miami. You know, I read the Satoshi white paper on my flight down to that conference, and really was a fantastic event to understand what Bitcoin is about and what everybody's trying to do. And I've been sort of all in ever since.
Just reading the white paper is what it took for you, huh?
Well, actually, I think that it became very clear to me in my early conversations, even at the cocktail party the first night, that one of the great challenges that Bitcoin has is how do you properly protect the private key? And I've learned to extend that conversation to really say, how do we improve the quality of the instructions that we're sending to the miners? At the end of the day, Bitcoin really is two pieces. It's the back office network of blockchain and all the wonderful things that blockchain does. But blockchain is only as good as the instructions you send to the blockchain. So if I steal your private key, now I'm doing a transaction that the blockchain will store perfectly for all time, but it's not the transaction that you intended to have happen. And so trusted computing technologies bring a really interesting set of global standards to how do we properly protect the formation of the instruction that we send. And so that's what the cybersecurity controls that are in our device make possible, is how do we secure the private key, secure the formation of the instruction, properly collect the user's intent, and package that all up in a manner that we can send it over in secure networks to the mining equipment to come to a consensus that this is an instruction we want to process into a Bitcoin transaction.
There's something called the Trusted Execution Environment and Trustonic, and I guess those are specific to the Android platform, is that right?
They're actually specific to the ARM chipset. So you know, obviously most smartphones are running on an ARM chip, but there are devices that run Windows that are using ARM chips. Specifically, what we're using is inside the processor. Many years ago, almost a decade ago, ARM introduced the capability for isolated execution. You basically can interrupt the main processor's execution of the operating system and run a second operating system that's very highly isolated in the device. And so Rivets is able now to write code that runs in that second isolated execution environment.
Are there many, I don't know, hardware processes or apps out there, software that are taking advantage of this?
So not very many. Most people have been considering the network to be any device, and I have a username and password. And so, you know, today you have a username and password for something like Netflix. You can go anywhere in the world and type it in. Of course, you can also share your Netflix password with any of your friends. And so one of the problems is that people don't tend to lose the data. Devices steal the data. And so in certain examples, like Bitcoin's a great example of one, you wouldn't want to go up and start doing a $100,000 Bitcoin transaction on the cruise ship computer because you will lose all your Bitcoins. And because the devices have all sorts of malware running in them that are designed to steal your codes, et cetera. And so this is moving to a world where the devices are known devices. They're my devices. So my collection of devices becomes my identity, not just my one thing.
That gives me encouragement. I'm such a paranoid person, and it seems like there are so many ways for hackers to steal your information and your Bitcoin. So unless you're, you know, doing the offline type key signing and everything. So I guess let's get into Rivets and tell me more about it.
Sure. So Rivets is a company that is made up of a team that's come out of the trusted computing space. Many of us have had experience for years building enterprise class solutions using these hardware security components. And we decided early on that we didn't want to try and build our only, you know, the only wallet. We wanted to build security tools that any wallet vendor could incorporate into their product. So whether it's client-side protection of the keys or a client-side wallet or it's an online wallet, we really are neutral in that position. We're here to provide a set of cybersecurity primitives that give full access to the capabilities of the phone so that any app vendor can include them. Bitcoin is a great example. So is messaging. We have a chat client that's using it to protect their encryption key and the encryption of their messages to do just, you know, standard over-the-top chat as a protected service as well. So whether you're trying to do security of files and folders in storage or MadeSafe, or you're going to send a document to Factum, all of them need the same basic requirement, which is how do I protect the private key? And how do I, in an isolated environment, properly sign the event or the instruction that's then sent off to the network?
Okay, great. So Rivets is definitely going to be doing more than just Bitcoin apps.
Yeah, we'd like to think of ourselves as the Twilio of trusted execution, if that's possible, where there are a variety of different environments out there. Over time, there'll be older devices and newer ones. And so we'll help abstract away that complexity and how do you set up and configure so that it's very easy to add a device. And then any app can write to a set of APIs or programming interfaces that allow them to encrypt, generate new keys, decrypt, sign something, do a Bitcoin transaction, et cetera. So for example, we're working now with the Omni Foundation to support the OmniCoin protocol directly within the Rivet. So, you know, any application that's building a coin model on top of Omni can take advantage of the Rivet's security capabilities. We're working with a partner in a similar manner to enable both authentication and encryption security for MadeSafe. And so we see really extending the environment to support a range of different capabilities that then become easy for any app vendor to incorporate into their product.
I'm not sure I completely understand the trusted execution environment. Is that basically the same as Trustonic?
So a number of layers. At the very bottom is the actual manufacturer of the chips. So ARM doesn't make chips. They design the chips that you buy in phones. Qualcomm, as an example, is a manufacturer of chips. So Snapdragon is a Qualcomm ARM chip that incorporates ARM's trust zone, the security primitives. Then in order to gain access to that, ARM formed a joint venture with Gemalto and GND, the two big SIM chip companies, and ARM, build us the operating system that allows us to load apps into ARM trust zone. With Trustonic, we can then take a Rivets app and properly provision it into any phone that supports the Trustonic capabilities. So all of Samsung, Alcatel OneTouch, HTC, Mitsu, ZTE, and a number of others are incorporating the Trustonic capability so that we can build an application that runs on their hardware. There's a similar but different technology path in Intel, and we're building a relationship with Intel to gain access to the trusted execution environment in Intel chipsets as well. And that continues to be an environment that's developing.
Do you expect to ever be able to access Apple's, I guess it's similar, their secure enclave?
Apple's secure enclave is a trusted execution environment, but Apple today controls it specifically for Apple. So there is no ability to program it without going through Apple. And right now, Apple does not offer to onboard any external tool providers.
Interesting. Can you explain more about just how the, and should I call it Trustonic or should I call it the trusted execution environment when I'm talking about it?
So I think generically the trusted execution environment, the right way to do it, Trustonic is an implementation of a trusted execution environment.
I guess I'm just trying to understand what it's capable of. Can it generate secure random numbers? Does it just hold one, basically a private key and everything is based on that? How does it work?
So the way it works today is you have a manufacturer key, in this case from Samsung, that verifies the signature of code that's properly loaded into the phone. And that works on a one-to-one basis with phones. So we write an app that's properly then provisioned into the phone. Once it's provisioned into the phone, we have the ability to generate as many public-private key pairs. It has internal hardware-based random number generators. You can properly modify those with, you know, doing the proper cryptographic functions so that the quality of those random number generation is very, very good. And we can seal data in the trusted execution space and write it out to any of the storage on the device. So you can take, for example, a document or a larger event and encrypt it and write it out to main storage and store the keys persistently in the trusted execution space. So you have the ability to hold secrets in between power cycles of the phone, and you can use those secrets to then unlock data that's unique on that one device that the device can use. With Rivets, we actually will allow you to host a number of apps in one trusted execution space. So we maintain isolation between different keys. So you could have keys from Bread Wallet and keys from Gem and keys from storage. And while they're all held within a Rivet, they're only accessible by the specific app that calls them.
It really does sound like a solution to a lot of the security issues people are having nowadays. I mean, do you see this as it becomes more and more implemented that it could really help with the current models that just aren't working for security?
Oh, very much so. I think one of the challenges has been these technologies were developed to solve the next generation of mobile payments. The problem has been over the last decade trying to get Visa, MasterCard, and those guys to import them into their architecture. And so even Apple, with Apple Pay, wasn't strong enough to get the merchants to change their process. They, in essence, are still sending around what look like tokenized credit card numbers. The beauty of Bitcoin is that Bitcoin's doing the one thing that nobody's been brave enough to do, which is onboard merchants. And so today, there are over 100,000 merchants that take a Bitcoin transaction. So all of these modern security capabilities can now be incorporated in securing e-commerce end-to-end, where you have all the benefits of what feels like a payment terminal and a smart card in your phone, delivering a transaction across the network to a merchant to properly compensate them for some product or service.
So what hardware would a merchant have to be using to take advantage of this trusted environment?
In essence, none. It would benefit the merchant to also have their merchant wallet keys protected by hardware, but it's not a requirement.
Okay, because the person signing the Bitcoin transaction is where the security is really?
That's correct. I mean, at the end of the day, you can go check the value that's in your, you know, of Bitcoin you have without being at risk of losing your Bitcoin, right? That's a capability we all have today. It's only when I spend it that I need to have proper protection of my private key.
Sure, and they wouldn't need to keep their private key on that terminal, I guess, that's receiving.
That's correct.
Today's magic word is trust. T-R-U-S-T. Use the magic word to claim your share of this week's listener distribution of LTB Coin on letstalkbitcoin.com. How does one actually know, say it's on their Android, that the trusted execution environment is actually being utilized when they're, you know, seeing things happen? Like, how would you know that there's not malware generating what you're seeing or doing?
So one of the key components is a trusted user interface, which is the ability of the device to draw on the screen in a manner the operating system can't see. And there are a variety of different theories as to how consumers will then recognize that they're looking not at a malware-generated screen, but a proper secure display. And I think one of the best ones is that you pick an individual personal photograph and use it as the background of the screen. because it's not possible for the operating system to see that screen, it's really, really, really difficult for the malware to guess what photograph you've used. And so once you provision it once, that same photo will appear in the background. If you don't see that photo, then it's not being generated by the secure display.
That's really interesting.
You know, banks today do it with just a simple code word, like your code word appears and, again, the operating system can't see it. There are a variety of different mechanisms. My favorite one right now is just a simple photograph. I think it's extremely hard to copy and something the user can get very familiar with and will recognize instantly.
It sounds like this is something that will probably become pervasive, I guess.
Very much so. I think we're moving to a world where we'll log into our device and our device will register and log us in with all the services to which we belong. That the idea of any device is becoming more and more foreign. You don't really wander up to random computers and type in your banking numbers. You know better, right?
Yeah.
Nobody uses the hotel terminal, which has got every piece of keyboard logging software running on it, to do something important because you're carrying a device in your pocket. I think one of the really important parts is that if you lose a device, you know you lost it. You know, there's 100,000 years of evolution that have gone on that when you sort of walk out of the building, you're like, oh my God, I forgot my phone. Hang on a second. I got to go back inside and get it. Usually it happens right after the door locks behind you. Somehow that extra little click like triggers the memory. And that biological response, I think, is an incredibly important piece of the cybersecurity offering. Because today, I give you a password. You might have downloaded the wrong attachment on email this morning. We stole all your passwords. You're not going to know that you lost control of your password until something bad happens. On the other hand, if you had registered your phone to a service and your phone or your laptop or your tablet goes missing, usually within a day or so, you'll know that you're missing your device and you'll do something about it. You'll buy a new device or you'll disconnect the old device. And it's those actions that really provide then the protection of your relationships with services, accounts, money, etc.
What does happen if you lose your device? Could someone just access things easily? And how do you recover from that?
The simple picture is that I have a PIN number that protects my device from specific services. And because a device is registered, it's certainly possible to tell any service to please stop listening to this device, right? So the keys on a device can be unique and you can easily use a multi-sig type transaction to say, okay, I no longer have this device. Please move that environment over to another one. We firmly believe that your collection of devices provides you with redundancy and backup. So my PC, my tablet, my phone. If I buy a new tablet, I just want to magically add all the services that are on my old tablet to my new one and disconnect the old one. There's always a circumstance where my house burns down, I lose all my devices at the same time. And for that, we believe there are quite a few different existing Bitcoin technologies to provide great redundancy and backup of keys. There should be no reason you ever lose a key. So whether it's a paper-based wallet or a mnemonic on a HD wallet, you know, those are simple mechanisms that work very well today for recovery. And you can certainly spread that information around to more than one party. So in the case that your house burns down, you know, maybe you have to call two of your siblings to get your keys back or let the consumer decide what they think is an effective recovery mechanism, and provide them some guidance on how to set it up. But it's something that you should only have to do once, you know, once in a lifetime, not multiple times a year.
Okay, so if we're living in a world a few years in the future where we're using this technology provided by Rivets or helped by Rivets, mm-hmm. I guess there's probably still a password or biometric access to your phone, say, or?
Correct. I think that for higher dollar value transactions or important information, having something that binds the human to the device, biometric is good, voice print is good, simple PIN number works incredibly effectively. For very simple transactions, it's just physical presence of the device. You don't care if you lose your device and you lose $10, but you don't want to lose $10,000. Think of your Easy Pass in your car. Somebody breaks in your car, steals your Easy Pass. Okay, how far can they really drive? How much money can they aggregate in tolls before you notice that your Easy Pass is missing? You don't need a PIN number on your Easy Pass. And I think the same thing is true here. The real solution is that my collection of devices then also provides me with that redundancy. So if I'm shopping from my PC, I have all of my transaction capabilities on my PC that I have on my phone. I don't have to fetch my phone and wave it in front of my laptop. The security that exists within the Intel chipsets is the same as within ARM. And so I should be able to have my collection of devices represent my accounts.
What's to keep, say, on your PC malware from logging in and performing transactions?
So I have a trusted execution environment with secure display in the Intel chipsets today. So there is actually a similar capability to what's in the ARM chipset in the Intel chipsets. And so it's not possible for malware to press the buttons on the screen to execute the transaction because the malware can't see the screen. So Intel's been doing a technology called IPT, Identity Protection Technology, for a couple of years now, where what they do is they put a pin pad up that's scrambled in its orientation. So even though malware can steal the mouse clicks, you don't know what it's clicking on. And so it's extremely difficult to steal the pin number.
Okay, great. That's I love that you have great answers for every one of my fears. That sounds like that would work. So I've seen you're working with BitPay, and you mentioned a few other companies. I mean, can you rattle off all the companies that you're, I guess, forming relationships with who are interested in your technology?
So the list is getting fairly long. We're actually at Texas Bitcoin going to hopefully show some of the first transactions on the Omni protocol. Mm-hmm. So we've been working with them to implement direct support. And with that, I think we'll end up with support for the Tether capabilities. So you can put real money on your phone, which is interesting. We're also working with a small company that's implementing support for MadeSafe's network, Infinity Algorithms. And that's also a recent relationship, as well as we're building support for the Factum capabilities. So that's what we're talking about at Texas Bitcoin. In the past, we've announced with StorageJ, with Red Wallet, with quite a few others in the space. We see a very strong participation from the broader community. BitPay did a great job with us at Mobile World Congress, showing end-to-end transactions on Samsung phones in Samsung's booth in Barcelona at Mobile World Congress. It was fantastic. Here we were showing the absolute state of the art of mobile payment running on Bitcoin and blockchain technology on a Samsung phone. It was really a great set of demonstrations.
I saw you were recently on the Kaiser Report with Max Kaiser. Was that at the same time?
Yeah, that was great fun. That was right after the Mobile World Congress. We had an opportunity to meet with Max and be on his show. And, you know, it's great fun to show this technology. We've spent so many years as industry talking about secure mobile payment. And to actually lean forward and show that capability in Bitcoin. I think this is one of the really fun things, is to turn the tables a little bit. You know, most people would say Bitcoin has a cybersecurity problem. I don't look at it that way. Bitcoin has enabled us to show the cybersecurity solution that's not been possible before in all the normal payment and fiat payment rails. So we finally have a platform we can innovate on and really show the state of the art of what's possible. And put it in the hands of real people. You know, a payment pilot on Bitcoin with 100,000 merchants and a few billion dollars in commerce is a nice starting point in helping to change the world to a world where, I don't know, I'll use an example. I was driving from Florida to Massachusetts with a bunch of horses this weekend, and I went through South Carolina and I stopped at one truck stop and it killed all my credit cards. Because clearly I'm not supposed to drive up the East Coast, I'm supposed to fly. And I got caught in whatever paradigm that the credit card industry thought was, you know, this is clearly not Steven. He doesn't ever drive up the East Coast. And not one credit card, like five credit cards stopped working because of one truck stop.
Wow. And were you using all five or just using one and it just...
Well, that's what you do. You buy $90 worth of diesel fuel, you swipe your card, it doesn't work. You swipe your other card, it doesn't work. And every time I swiped the card, it killed the card. And then I had, then it took me a whole, you know, the next day I'd call every one of the credit card companies and go, yes, I did intend to spend $90 on diesel fuel. And it was just, It was just a very funny experience where, you know, their systems are quite good. Of course, I could fly to Taiwan and buy lunch and no problems at all. But a truck stop in the middle of South Carolina, that's clearly not on my normal travel patterns.
So, how did you get gas?
I paid them in cash.
Well, it's a good thing you had cash.
It's a good thing I had cash, exactly.
Wow, you might have been asking if anyone could accept Bitcoin.
Exactly, yeah. Paying for Bitcoin for my diesel fuel. That probably isn't going to work in South Carolina for a while, but we'll get there.
And I would just imagine someone with your technical security background, it must have been really fascinating to learn the details of how the blockchain works and all that.
So, yes, and I'll tell you the part that's interesting is if you look at the blockchain, and you look at any one record on the blockchain, the thing that's really hard to do is prove that the user intended for that transaction to happen.
Sure.
So that's why if you ever read the New York BitLicense, they ask for cybersecurity controls. That's the extra data that's around a transaction that says, yes, I have other information that helps me to establish that this was the transaction the user intended. So what Rivets is doing is helping that process by collecting additional information on what kind of device, what state was it in, is it a proper trusted execution space, and we intend to add that through a multi-sig mechanism into a transaction. So now I know that it's Steven's device that was in a known good healthy state that sent me this transaction, and Steven's device has these trusted execution capabilities. So now later on in life, when I go look a year from now at that blockchain element, I can tell you a lot more about the quality of that transaction.
So who are the two parties who would be, or two or more parties who are signing this multi-sig transaction?
One half of it is myself, the user, and the other half is a test of the integrity of my device. So what you do is you put a reference value out on the blockchain, and then you just collect a current reference value. And if they match, then the transaction goes forward. If they don't match, then I have to go to one of my other keys to permission that transaction because my device is not healthy.
Okay, great. You're going to be at the Texas Bitcoin Conference in a few days?
I will be.
It's going to be my first Bitcoin conference ever, and I've really gone to very few conferences, professional, technical, or anything like that. You sound like you've been to quite a few conferences. Is that accurate?
I have enjoyed running around the world, going to the Bitcoin conferences and meeting a great collection of people. And, you know, I hope you have a great time at Texas Bitcoin. It's Paul Snow and his wife, Linda Snow, put on the event are fantastic, and they run a great event. And we really look forward to a fantastic panel of both speakers and technology conversations. I think we're going to have some of the guys from IBM there. I know George Gilder, who's on my board, is one of the keynote speakers at Texas Bitcoin, and George is always entertaining. So it should be a really great event.
Okay, are you actually a speaker?
I am speaking at the event, yes.
Okay, great, great. And do you have any suggestions for me how to prepare, what, you know, traveling, the whole deal? I mean, do you just do a carry-on usually? Do people dress nice at these events? What should I expect?
You know, this is Bitcoin, so you can come any way you want, from a suit and bow tie to your torn-up blue jeans. That's the best part about Bitcoin is it's really a complete cross-section. You know, I don't know, I'm a firm believer in travel carry-on, right? Don't travel heavy. You never know what your airplane's going to do to you.
That makes sense. I certainly wouldn't want to have a big issue in trying to run. I'm going to be arriving just, I guess, as the kickoff party. Are you going to be able to make that on Friday night?
Yeah, I'll be there for Friday night.
Okay, great. Well, hopefully I'll get to meet you in person.
I look forward to it.
Great. Well, thanks so much, Steven. That was really a pleasure to talk to you. We'll see you in Texas.
I look forward to seeing you there, and thanks for the interest.
All right. Thank you, Steven. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
My conversation with Steven gave me a little hope. I must admit, after my last interview with hacker Jamie Cochran, plus seeing that the three major browsers just got owned again at Pwn2Own simply by visiting a malicious URL, it all made me feel pretty down about computer security. It seems clear everyone needs to have a private key that absolutely can't be known or can't be taken, yet can be used to sign on one's behalf. And it seems like the trusted execution environment that's in many chips nowadays may provide that necessary solution. I just hope there aren't any backdoors built into these chips that weaken such a great security model. Oh, and because the spelling isn't obvious, Rivetz is spelled R-I-V-E-T-Z, and you can find more at rivetz.com. Thanks for listening to episode 13 of The Bitcoin Game. Check out this episode's page on letstalkbitcoin.com for links to topics we discussed. You can find a listing of all the episodes of The Bitcoin Game by going to thebitcoingame.com. Please let me know you listen by following or tweeting to TheBTCGame on Twitter, or by commenting on this episode's page on letstalkbitcoin.com. Bye-bye.